Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to a very special Everything Iconic. It's like an Everything Iconic book club, and I'm here with the one and only Greggy Bennett, and we are going to discuss the one and only Mariah Carey.
Greggy, book of our time. The book of our generation. Hi, Danny.
The 2020 Bible, if you will.
Essentially, it's replaced the Bible on my nightstand, for sure.
Have you ever lived a life where you had a Bible on your nightstand?
I don't know. I went to Catholic school and I went to Catholic college, like from the beginning until the very end. And I don't think I've ever kept a Bible anywhere nearby.
Right. Until now, Greggy, how did you like it? We're both lambs. And so I was, first of all, so excited to have you on anytime we get to talk about Mariah Carey. How did you like it? Just sort of overall thoughts before we dive in.
I was surprised at how honest and vulnerable she was. I thought it was a really, really great read. I think that the audiobook will change the way we consume celebrity memoirs. I mean, she really went all in. The music, the singing, like the ad-libbing of all of it was incredible. And it really felt like she took this seriously, if that makes sense. Sometimes you can tell when her heart's not in something, and she really, really wanted this to be done right. And I think she did a great job.
Yeah, I was so impressed too. I felt like, I don't want to say I had low expectations, but I was just sort of thinking, you know, some celebrity memoirs are really great. And then there's others that are just clearly like a cash grab. They feel like it's time to release a celebrity memoir. And I didn't know what to expect exactly. I thought, if she was doing a cash grab, I thought, great for her. Like, get the money, get your coins. And,
totally.
And that'd be fine too. But then this, I felt like was really, there was a lot of substance to it. And a lot of things I didn't know. Some things, of course, we all speculated for years that were confirmed.
Right, right. There was definitely that. I think as a diehard fan, her confirming like who some of the songs were about down to like who the verses were about was big for me, because I've like forever been like, that's definitely about Allison right there. And I'm like, I was wrong. I was wrong. It was actually about Pat. So right. It's pretty crazy that she was that open and forthcoming with those details.
Did you notice, right off the bat, I have to say, did you notice on page 234, there's a paragraph that appears twice? You saw that, right?
Let me check.
Let's get our books for this book club. Everyone who's listening, go grab your book.
I just grabbed it off my shelf. 234, you said?
And I should also mention, anyone who's listening to this podcast, you can view it on the YouTube channel, youtube.com/DannyPellegrino1. We're going to put it up there. But yeah, on page 234, there's a paragraph that appears later on page 274 about yes. Glitter.
Yes, I do remember seeing the same thing twice, but I don't remember.
So while I think that this book was fantastic and nearly flawless, I do, and in some ways, I think it was great that that paragraph appeared twice, but I thought there was one little oversight that I was curious about.
Yeah, well, I think it was also like applicable to both chapters. So why not copy and paste? Like, right. Work smarter, not harder.
Also, as someone who ghostwrites books, and books are a lot of words. You have to fill up a lot of pages.
Yeah.
So you know what? If you got to publish something twice, go for it.
Books are hard. Words are hard.
Words are hard. So, Greggy, I want to start by talking about her family. We learned a lot about her sister, Allison, her mom, Pat, her brother. Early on, she talks about how her sister mistreated her. And that was the stuff to me that was sort of most unexpected, because we haven't heard her speak about her childhood very often outside of her music and her lyrics. And so that was, to me, the most surprising. I just didn't know a whole lot about her relationship with her sister. I knew a little bit about her relationship with the mom, but Allison was surprising to me. What did you make about the way Allison treated her? There was an allegation about Allison trying to basically like drug her up and sort of pimp her out at one point. Like there was a lot of heavy stuff.
Yeah. Well, so I've always, over the years, there have been multiple like interviews that Allison's done. I mean, she references a lot of it in the book as them selling, selling her out for any like cheesy publication or interview. So it's always only been Allison's side of the story, right? She's never really given any oxygen to any of those stories, and they usually disappear as quickly as they would come out. But I'm glad she was able to set the record straight. I feel like it was like the whole thing was very healing for her to like put down on paper and finally have her side of the story told in a definitive way. I think the whole book has been about her telling her side of the story finally. And I think that she has always been like mocked or kind of seen as this kind of hokey jokey figure. People don't seem to take her very seriously. So I'm glad that she really focused on telling talking about the experiences that really made her who she is. So yeah. I think it was important for her to include all of the stuff about Allison because it was formative for her. And I think that it contributes to a lot of her insecurities that she's felt over the years.
I like that you mentioned Allison and the family sort of selling stories. There's one point in the book where she says her family looks at her like an ATM with a wig on. That's the line she used, which is a great line. But I feel like now in 2020, that's not a thing. Like, and she was even talking about it. She did a great interview with Oprah where they were talking about family and kind of using them for money and stuff like that. And I don't know if it was that interview or somewhere else where she mentioned that that's not really a thing anymore because there's so many blogs, there's so much social media. It's so easy to kind of shut down a story right away. But back in the 90s, family members and stuff could go to the National Enquirer or to these places and sell something for a few thousand dollars or more. Some nonsense.
Yeah. And you forget that she has been famous for so long that like at the beginning of her career, that was the only like form of, that was the only way that people could control their image through like a very calculated, like publicist, record label, the whole machine behind you and trying to shape the narrative around your career or around like a bad story in the press was a lot harder than it is today. So it's almost fascinating to remember that she came up at a time where like it was 1990. So it was really not that far away from like the 80s and like Bette Midler hosting the VMAs. Like that was all like within a few years of her coming onto the scene. And now she's still like as relevant as she was then today, which is pretty incredible.
Wait, Greggy, take me back. So in 1990, were you into her right away? Did it take you a little while? Like,
no, I was four in 1995. I got into her initially because I heard around the Music Box era, heard her on Magic 98.3, which is the Central Jersey's smooth, easy listening station. And I remember on the way to the Jersey Shore and Hero played on the radio. My mom was like, that's Mariah Carey. And I was like, oh, I'm into that. I'm like I had only listened to like Disney soundtracks up until then. I was young. And then I had a babysitter who loved her, who would bring her cassettes over. And so that was really what kicked it off. But I was probably like 8 or 9, I want to say.
Yeah. You know, my mom always liked the divas. So she always would have the cassettes of, she had Gloria Estefan, Whitney Houston, Celine Dion, Mariah. And I remember when that first Mariah album came out, like she just always had the cassette in the car or playing in the house. And I just attribute my mom making me gay because it was like, my dad always like kind of like the oldies, like he liked Motown and that kind of stuff. But my mom, like she just loved the divas. She would always have Barbara or Mariah or someone playing.
Celine was big in our car.
Reggie, let's talk about the Celine. I know we're jumping around a bit, but can we talk about the Celine of it all? Okay. So let me just
that chapter about Divas Live is like, crazy.
Oh my God. Greggy, I wanted so much more from that Divas Live. I want a whole fucking book about Divas Live 1998. Like, I need a whole...
Same! I want a miniseries produced by Ryan Murphy. I want all of it.
Why hasn't it happened yet? I feel like there needs to be more content. I know there was a while back, maybe a couple years ago, they did like an oral history someone did of the Divas Live, and it was... I ate that shit up. It was like a website did it. But so in the book, she talks about this Divas Live moment. So in 1998, there was, of course, this iconic concert for VH1. They had all the divas. They had Aretha, Gloria, Shania, Celine, Mariah, and featuring Carole King. I didn't miss anyone, did I?
No, you got Carole.
I know it like the back of my hand.
Oh, the best. Iconic.
And at the very end, there was supposed to be this medley, or not a medley, there was supposed to be a group song of Natural Woman. And first of all, Aretha decided she didn't want to rehearse because of the air conditioning being on, which that...
They're playing games.
Which that was a story, too, that I feel like we've heard, but it was just nice to kind of get more confirmation that this thing happened.
100%. I mean, you remember the pop-up video episode of Divas Live, right? Like, where they were Mariah changed her nail polish between each number, and she wasn't going to sing in the closing number until she saw Aretha walking to the stage. Like, I remember all those factoids, so I feel like I'm a historian on the whole thing, but I loved getting a firsthand account from her as what happened on that stage.
We were so lucky to be raised amongst the era of pop-up video and like all those pop culture shows that just presented us all that wonderful information. Bring it back. So then there was this story about Celine during that end performance of Natural Woman, where Celine starts doing these runs, and Mariah in the book says she sort of, I don't know what the wording she uses, but she said she sort of went to the background because she even realized like in the moment, this is not something you do. This is Aretha's song. And by the way, we both love Celine. So like, you know,
I don't think there was a bone in Celine's body where she was like, I'm going to show up Aretha Franklin right now. I guarantee you, she was like, this is a fun celebration. And like, everyone will just sing. And like, there's no way that she thought Aretha would take offense to that. But that's just her way, I guess.
Yeah. And it was just, those were the moments. Like I love all the deep family stuff, but I did just get so much joy hearing her talk about these other people that we know in pop culture and just her relationship to them. And that was a particular instance that I just, the saliva coming out of my mouth when I was reading that chapter. Just like
I wanted it to be 100 pages long.
Right. Okay. So I want to talk about, we're going back a little bit, the Tommy Mottola years, which were a tough time for us all, really.
Locked away in Sing Sing.
Sing Sing, that compound that she lived in with Tommy Mottola, then husband.
I was going to make my Zoom background a picture of Sing Sing burning to the ground, but I couldn't find a clear enough one. There's like aerial shots of it.
Oh my God. Yeah. So she lived in this compound with the husband. And, you know, I always sort of thought that maybe there was more of a romantic connection between her and Tommy than like we knew, but it turns out I don't think there was anything. Like,
nothing there.
Not even the slightest of sparks between them, it felt like, right?
Nope. I can't imagine that he did anything for her in that respect. Like, she did not feel, I think it was more of like a fatherly, like, protector, Svengali situation than it was ever a romantic one.
Did you feel like she was easier on him in the book than you would have imagined? Because I did.
I did, yes. I think she went easy on him and Jennifer during the firecracker chapter. I think she went easy on him in the way that the exchanges that they had. Like, you could tell by her impersonations of him that there were longer rants that she could probably have recited from memory. That she, I think she did it was diplomatic enough while still going pretty hard.
Yeah. You mentioned the Jennifer thing. So that Jennifer sample, I mean, there's a paragraph.
She should be in jail is where she should be.
Where do you stand on J-Lo? I always get shit if I talk any shit about J-Lo.
I know, people love her. I mean, listen, the real lambs have known for many years that this caper took place, that this theft. And hearing the original version of thievery, like the hearing the original version of Loverboy on the Rarities, which if you haven't listened, you should stream it ASAP. I got upset because I'm like, there's no way I would not have come out of the closet if this song had come out when I was a sophomore in high school. It's so gay and fun. And it would have been like the hit of the summer. And I feel bad that we're not living in that alternate timeline where it was released. And maybe it wouldn't have been such a disaster the whole era, but who knows?
You know, I love a lot of J-Lo's stuff. And So this isn't meant to be shade towards her, but I do always think, like, if you look at a lot of her hits and her catalog, there's just these consistencies of, I don't want to say thief, like Christina Milian on Play and Ashanti. Mm-hmm. And there's just these instances. And I always wonder, I would love to hear like Ashanti or Christina Milian discuss it more, because maybe there's like something we're missing from the business side of things. But I find it fascinating.
I know, it's crazy. And what's interesting is that for the Emancipation era, she didn't talk about this in the book. She really didn't go into depth on any of the like behind the scenes people, which I was kind of excited and hoping she would do. Like she hired Benny Medina as her manager, who was up until that point, J-Lo's manager, right? And he orchestrated the whole rollout for Emancipation with this woman, Marvette Brito. But they, like, he really threw all of his weight behind her. And then in the, like a few years later, it went back to Jennifer. So it's interesting to see how over the years they've kind of gone like this in certain aspects of their careers.
And it also makes the industry feel just much smaller than it does otherwise. It's like, oh, these people all do 100%. Use the same people. And
yeah,
you know, you mentioned E=MC² and the Emancipation era. And in terms of the Tommy Mottola stuff, it was interesting to me how like she was still writing about that time in her life, with songs like Side Effects and other things in later albums, which were, when you think about it, were, you know, 15 years later after the Tommy years, she's still writing about that experience and so beautifully too.
Yeah. And what I love, and it's almost, she kind of, I've always thought this, but she kind of confirmed it for me in the book, was that it's like she stubbed her toe 20 years ago and can still write a song about exactly how it felt. For her to talk, I mean, Subtle Invitation is a song on the Charm Bracelet album, but I feel like that, Lullaby is the song on the Charm Bracelet album that is like the sequel to The Roof. And that's all, but she didn't bring that up, but you can tell that it's like a callback to that song, and it's still about Derek, or DJ, if we're calling him that. So I think
Derek Jeter.
DJ, that however long that relationship was, has really sustained her and her songwriting for so long, which is great for us as fans. But I wonder what he thinks of all of it.
I know. Greggy, I thought Derek Jeter of it all, I really thought that, you know, maybe she wrote a song about him. Of course, people always speculate about The Roof, but to know how much he affected her in so many different ways.
That, like, whole album. The whole album.
Butterfly album. Like, it was shot.
The best album ever. So, yeah. Like, thank you, Derek.
Magnum opus. Yeah, I was so happy about Derek. I was like, oh my God. And also, she had just glowing things to say about him, not only in the book, but also in like her press tour and stuff. Like, she was talking about how much respect she had for him and his family. And I just liked that. It made me happy to know that, despite most men being trash, he wasn't.
Well, he wasn't. And also, he seemed to be the first like positive male relationship that she had. And I don't want to say in her life, but like, I mean, there was Henry, who cheered out of his truck window when he heard Vision of Love on the radio. But I don't know. I loved picturing that for some reason. I just think that like she went from being in the shack, right, and just like fight or flight, to then being like a prisoner locked away in Sing Sing. And then that was her first taste of like being a girl who like met a boy that liked her and was nice to her and was probably just as famous as she was at that point, but in different circles. So it was nice to hear her tell the story of like being courted and like having those butterflies in her stomach for the first time.
What do you make of her relationship with men in the business or in the industry that she worked with? I know at one point in the book, she talks about how she had a no dating policy, I believe, with other musicians she worked with. And she's
rappers.
Rappers. Yeah, yeah. And I think, especially in the 90s, if she was dating a rapper that she worked with, it would have come out, but we never heard those stories. And I wonder, I guess I'm thinking about it now. It's like her relationship as a kid with men seemed to have manifested itself as an adult in these working relationships in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think it was interesting to hear her talk about her relationship with JD, right? Because he's been a collaborator with her for so long, and like they almost seem like brother and sister, but she seems to have always, she's always quick to put her male like collaborators in that friend zone or that like brotherly box so that she doesn't open herself up to any, I guess, liability, which
smart.
Which is smart. She's a true professional.
You know, the Derek Jeter stuff, she was talking about how her assistant helped keep the secret. And I was just thinking the secrets that assistant must have. I mean, there's must be so many things.
Right. Who was the assistant? That's what I want to know.
Right.
At that point.
Okay. We got to talk about the glitter era. So, you know, there were claims, of course, of Tommy Mottola really sabotaging the glitter era. We mentioned with the lover boy, he quickly put J-Lo on a sample that Mariah had been using. And it really is what drove her to this really a breaking point. And she mentions TRL, which was another moment that we as fans grew up with kind of, it was an infamous moment that I don't think we had a lot of context to for so many years. And I found it fascinating when she talked about Carson Daly and how he was aware of the stunt. But of course it was live TV and he sort of just had, he was improvising a little bit and making it seem like a bigger thing than she thought it should have been.
Yeah, like if you think about that time, like I remember it vividly and I remember how big of a deal it was that she did that. And if you compare it to the stunts and the shenanigans that the kids these days do on the regular, like they just like they have OnlyFans now for them. Like, what did that girl, Bella Thorne? She has her own OnlyFans.
That girl.
Like, no, there's no.
Dorinda Medley has her OnlyFans too.
True. There's no rules anymore. There's truly no rules. And for them to make this big deal over her wearing like a giant oversized t-shirt and then taking it off and revealing like shorts and a tank top was wild. And it's even more crazy to think about looking back on it.
Yeah, I know the press cycle of that whole thing was insanity. And I mentioned those VH1 shows like Behind the Music and I Love the 90s and 7. I just remember growing up, they always would refer back to that ice cream truck moment or that ice cream cart moment. And yeah, when you really break it down, it's like, what the fuck big deal was it? Like, it wasn't a big deal.
I know. And I was actually, during that time, I was so pissed because the week before she went on TRL with the ice cream cart, she was there for a scheduled appearance to promote glitter. And I was in the audience and I requested a video in the little box in the bottom left-hand corner. And like, there's no trace of it anywhere on the internet because a week later she went on and they made such a big deal over this that that's the only one anybody remembers. So
what song did you request?
Blink-182, The Rock Show. They told me.
Oh, they made you do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
They told me what to say. At the end, I go, I love you, Mariah. I love you so much. And then it like fans away.
Oh man. I was surprised she didn't talk about the TRL Cribs moment because I feel like that really was also important. I mean, there were so many moments in her career. How can she break them all down?
I know, but that was a pretty big one. Cribs is, and it's something she's like, people still talk about to this day, but I guess she talks about like the apartment in general. So
that was, I really attribute that Cribs moment to opening up this whole thing now, which now like I'm obsessed with the Architectural Digest celebrity tours. But I think it was really like Mariah's episode of Cribs that made people just crave that kind of content. Because up until her, there was a lot of Cribs of like, I don't know, people's shitty houses. You know, like it wasn't always big celebrities like her.
Right. It was like people that were on MTV shows and they lived in like a McMansion in like the hills somewhere in like Encino.
There's one where like Willa Ford is showing us her bra collection and like, or there was like, I remember the Dream house, which was, I don't know if it was all their houses or I don't know.
Dream, like the, like He Loves Me, He Loves You Not.
That's exactly the one I'm talking about. Yeah.
Danny, I feel like you or I could be on Cribs if they were on Cribs. So
I wish I love a celebrity home though. And I feel like they're popular now and I attribute it to Mariah.
Yeah,
she's
been ahead of the curve for a lot of things. She was the first to put a rapper on a pop song, and she was the first to open her home to an all exclusive tour. What would you call that?
Yeah, it's exclusive.
She's been ahead of the curve her whole life.
Also, I think because she's such an entertainer, the moments she gave us in that Cribs episode within it of the bathtub or on the heels on the she's in heels on the stepper.
On the stepper, yeah.
In the leotard. So good. So good. So she talks about the glitter era, and she says, it warmed my heart that she has a different perspective on the glitter era now, because I do feel like for years she really had such horrible memories attached to it. And it feels like within the past couple of years with there was a Justice for Glitter campaign that
there was,
I believe we were a part of. I'm attributing it to us.
We may have started it.
But I'm happy that she has a good point of view for it now.
Yeah. And honestly, like, Glitter's a great album. Like, objectively speaking, it's a really, really good album. And I feel like it got, obviously it was released on September 11th. Like, it did not have a lot. It was up against a lot. But it's remained a playable album from start to finish for me for a long time. She covered Last Night a DJ Saved My Life. Like, that's great in and of itself.
The whole album.
Turn You On. Like, hits. If We, which is the song that she sang back and forth with Ja Rule, which is the other thing they stole from her. And rushed out the I'm Real remix, where the other girl and Ja Rule sang back and forth to each other.
The other girl.
That's where that idea came from, viewers and listeners.
Listeners, know your history. the Glitter album, I think, is phenomenal. And I also think it was an 80s vibe when people maybe weren't ready to like revisit the 80s quite yet.
Yeah.
Because what year was that? Was that? It was 2001. Yeah, yeah. So... I had to remember that. Yeah. I don't know if people were quite ready for it, but also Glitter's like a fun, silly movie too. Like Oscar winning.
I mean, the transition of her, like, little girl, her in the back of the car, and then it like fades into like her on the screen at the club dancing to Lime. Like, that's an iconic moment.
Also Padma Lakshmi in it, and I love her.
Yep. She's love silk.
Her. I know. I'm newly obsessed with Top Chef. I think, I don't know if I told you this, but I'm newly binging it throughout this year of quarantine.
You finally made it to Top Chef on the list of shows you haven't watched.
Yeah, like I always put
it, I'll give it a shot.
I always put it off. And then now I'm like obsessed with her and Gail and Tom Colicchio. Like, they're my favorite. So she also discusses during the Glitter breakdown period, the role that her brother and her mother played. And I'm curious to, I hope we get answers to this as to whether or not Pat, her mom, reads the book and how she feels about it, because I'm curious about it. I actually saw when she did her holiday special for ABC, I don't know, it was five or how many years ago, for her second holiday album, I was there and Patricia performed with her, O Come All Ye Faithful. And they seemed to have a good rapport. Her mom, Patricia, seemed very nervous. I remember they had to record it two or three times because when Patricia would come on to sing her part, the audience would start clapping. And Mariah had to come out and say, like, if you could not clap for her part, she's an opera singer, and so it throws opera singers off. Or she had to say something like that. It throws opera singers off when you clap because they're not used to the clapping, or something along those lines. But it seemed like in between takes and stuff that they were pretty good, like that motherly relationship. And so I always thought that it was sort of overblown, the tales we've heard about Patricia. And then reading the book, I'm like, oh no, this is a very complex, layered relationship these two have.
Very. But I mean, if you notice, she dedicated the book to her.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. So I think it's one of those, like, and she almost like deified her father in contrast to her mother. And I think, like, maybe if one day when her mother passes, like, she'll have a different perspective on it. She did say, like, death makes you change moves your heart to forgive or something like that. But I'm happy for her that she was able to move past whatever happened in like 2001 and whatever went on through the 90s. It seemed like there was a lot of jealousy on her mother's part. And I think that that had a negative effect on her. So I was happy to see Pat be on the Merry Christmas to You and do that with her. And it seems like they've gotten to a better place now, but I think she still felt like it was important for her to write about and to put down on paper somewhere as part of her story, her official story.
The relationship with her dad was very fraught too, and it seems so cinematic to me. I was reading that chapter about when she was visiting her dad right before he passed, and just so many of those moments felt cinematic to me. And I thought, we're going to get a movie out of this, hopefully one day, like, and it'll be good.
Well, I mean, the book is written like a movie. I mean, to have her start with her sad Christmases and to end on stage at Madison Square Garden with like all of the characters from the book in the audience like cheering for her. It was pretty cinematic.
Reggie, did you hear my question on Watch What Happens Live about Where Are You Christmas?
I did. I'm so glad we finally got an answer after all these years.
Like forever. That's all I've wanted to know about Where Are You Christmas, because she co-wrote it. And I'm like, does her version exist? And people were messaging me like, oh, we need a... She has a new album out called The Rarities, which are rare album or rare songs that haven't been released or different B-sides and things like that. But people were saying, we need a Christmas Rarities album. And like, that's all I want now. I want right? It so all bad.
All the uncovered gems from the Christmas sessions. What's funny is you're that way with, the way you are with Where Are You Christmas is the way I have been for years with the original Loverboy. So I'm finally having like my justice moment. And I'm glad we both were able to get that together during this this promo cycle.
I think you texted me when the album track list was released about Loverboy. I don't think any of us expected when she said the Rarities album was coming out, I don't think we expected to hear that.
Right. Well, I was like, I know she's gonna put like Everything Fades Away and Do You Think of Me on there, like songs that like and Slipping Away and songs that we had heard all throughout the years. But I was honestly gagged when she put that on there. Like, that was a power move. Would have been the song of the summer of 2001. The world would have been different, but it's not. So we got it now in 2020.
This episode of Everything Iconic is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. Now, I'm not sure if you've noticed, but it's definitely allergy season. You all know I've been struggling a little bit. I usually love the springtime, but I struggle with my allergies, which are just not the most fun. But luckily with Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, the only tissues I like to use, I can say, bring on the blooms, and I can face those allergies head on. Now, Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved, so you can attack watery eyes and battle runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. That's why I love these, because they're so incredibly soft and I don't want to touch my nose with something that's not. Now, I am obsessed with Kleenex. I think they are so really just the best to do it. So for this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on. Again, this allergy season, do not pick up something else. Grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Speaking of songs that we're getting now, we also learned that she released a whole rock album, or she did a whole rock album that was released with someone else on lead vocals, that Mariah had written many of the songs, I believe, and she also did sort of background, and I don't know, maybe you can explain, did she actually record them?
No, she did. So there is a version of her singing them. I don't know if it's
singing
still-
lead.
Singing lead, but it then was covered by this group. I forget the name of the group, but it just like their album sales increased, what, like 3,000% or something last week when it came out that she wrote most of it. And I guess she even named her vanity record label that Tommy gave her, Crave, after one of the songs that she wrote for the group. And over the years, she's mentioned this. That Crave was named after a secret song that she wrote that had a very special place in her heart. So to find out it was actually like an alt-rock album that she wrote in her spare time while recording Daydream, like, blew my mind.
It's crazy. I know. It's just an amazing little factoid. And we need those. I need to hear like the versions with her on lead. I listened to a couple that were on YouTube of, they were sort of covers. And there's one, I forget the name of it, but you can hear her background or sort of layered vocals. But I would love to hear, you know, I really would love to hear all these different genres. She's one of the people that I do think is underrated in that way, and that she can do very many, a lot of different genres. She has a country song that she did for that, I believe it was Tennessee movie. Mm-hmm. That is stunning.
It's right to leave, right to live.
I don't remember.
I forget that. I forget what it's called. But
it's a beautiful, like, a beautiful song, and of course we know she's done dance music, R&B, pop. I think she can do so many different things with her voice that she doesn't necessarily get credit for. And one of the only few people that come to mind that can also do that, I think, is Kelly Clarkson, which I'm not... I love Kelly. I was going to say I don't want to put them in the same breath, but I do actually love them both.
And but
I love
their vocalists who have versatile vocal styles that can lend their voices to many different styles of music. I think that's a nice way to put it.
Right. Yeah, we love them both. Okay, so she also references the New Year's Eve debacle, but it's a very small little segment. I thought I'd just read a little bit of what she said. So she said, "Listen, if being in the cold can make fingers go numb, imagine what it can do to delicate vocal cords. There's a certain performance of mine in the bitter cold wearing a sheer bedazzled leotard and 8-inch Louboutins at the world's busiest intersection in intimate proximity to stinking putrid garbage that everyone seems to want to remember and that I, quite honestly, often forget. To me, it's as if I was a child playing in the sandbox and I got sand in my eye, wet theatrically, and caused a scene. Then arrived 20 years later at my class reunion after having gotten a PhD and become a celebrated scholar, only to have my classmates ask, 'Oh, but how's your eye?' I was a lot of things in that fleeting moment in the cold, but I knew one thing I certainly was not. I was not broken, not even close. I had been through so much worse. All debacles are not created equal, darling." And to me, that was just so indicative of so many things in Mariah's career that I feel like the general public seems to hold on to, despite the fact that she's had all of these other amazing accomplishments. She's such a fantastic writer, vocalist, but a lot of the general public seems to just hold on to those moments. And I guess that's a human nature a little bit, to hold on to the bad and forget the good. But it was interesting to me that she addressed it in that way, because that was such a hugely publicized, very recent moment.
Yeah, and I would say, like, over the years, people who know me have obviously known my love for Mariah. And whenever something goes wrong, or whenever there's like a public, like an embarrassing moment, they almost revel in like calling me to ask me if I know about it, which is weird. It's a weird thing.
They do that to me too. It's annoying. I hate it.
Right. They're like, "Did you see your girl?" It's like, yeah. Like, have you ever had a bad day at work? I don't know what else to say. She's sold over 300 million records around the world. Like, she's richer than you or I will ever be. Like, who gives a shit? Who cares? Like, what do you care? I don't know. I've never understood that, like, schadenfreude that's associated with all of her missteps over the years.
I do that on my Instagram. I do a Jessica Thursday, and people always say they want a Mariah Monday. And I don't think I can handle it, because oftentimes, even with the Jessica one, it's like people write mean things. And I love Jess, but like, I can handle if they're a little critical of her, but like, I just can't handle people coming so feverishly to Mariah. Like, it would just make me
so
mad.
I can't either. Yeah, same. And I even, like, I don't engage with people like that. Like, people think they're going to rile me up by like being mean about her, but I just like don't. I don't know. I don't engage with it. I don't think it's like fun or like a productive use of anyone's time.
Right. So, Greggy, I want to talk about the things that weren't discussed in the book. Now, I have a list of things that just sort of came up as I was thinking of it. I know a lot of the press picked up on the fact that she doesn't talk about Eminem, which I liked that she didn't talk. I didn't think she needed to talk about Eminem. It wasn't really, I don't think it was a big enough part of her life. And to me, it almost would ruin that joke that she, that fantastic joke that she's done once or twice when people ask her about Eminem and she'll pick up a Godiva chocolate and say, "No, it's Godiva."
Or like when she was on Watch What Happens Live and he's like saying three nice things about Eminem and she's like, "They come in a bag. You can take them wherever you go. Sometimes they have peanuts in them." Like, that's her. I love that that's her go-to response for dealing with him. Yeah. She didn't really talk about a lot of her relationships. And that was interesting to me, but I guess like to her, they don't matter, or they're not part of like her story. But I would have loved to have heard more about some of her longer term relationships that maybe people didn't know about.
I think I would have liked to hear more about some of the professional relationships too that she had with like songwriters and different people she worked with. I know she does talk a bit about JD, and of course we got that great DeBrat story, but I think there were other collaborators I would have loved to hear about. We also didn't hear anything about American Idol. I don't even, was
forgot
that even,
all about that. Wow.
I know I was just going to ask if there was even like a passing reference to it. And I don't think there was.
No, there's not a lot from like the mid-teens through now. Like,
the Stella eras?
Well, Stella is nowhere to be found.
There's nothing
but all
about
of that is
nothing not about there. The e-reality show is not even mentioned. Mariah's World was the name of it.
She doesn't even mention recording Memoirs of an Imperfect Angel or like anything having to do with that whole period of time. And I know that's when she got pregnant. So like that's where she said that she turned down work and basically like stopped promoting the album and stuff. But and the way that she met Nick, like that all was very like, and then we met and then we got married and like, they didn't really go much into, she didn't go much into the divorce, probably out of respect for her kids. But like a lot of the things she's talked about, she dropped as easily as she talked about them. Like, and then it just didn't work out, which was kind of a nice way to put a bow on it, but not.
I didn't feel a lot of passion with the Nick Cannon stuff. Like it didn't feel like, I always thought they had a more passionate love affair than what I got from reading the portions about Nick.
Yeah, and like I hesitate to say this, but there was like I know that there was a guy that she was dating before she dated Nick, like sitting next to him at the Grammys the year of Emancipation. Like he was a guy that she dated for a long time, and he's not brought up at all in the book.
Wait, was this a fan? I don't know this.
He's like an A&R guy. Like it was never a public relationship. They didn't walk red carpets together. When I met her, I actually met him. He was with her every time that we like met. So I like know that that
was he nice? What was it like?
He was fine. Like he seems like tired, but like I don't know. Like it was always the middle of the night at like a restaurant, so of course he was tired. But she like that whole like there was no Benny Medina, there was no Stella, there was no E, there was no none of the. I don't know. I think it would have told a more complete. It would have given us a more complete picture. It's almost like there are little vignettes from like 2003 on. Like the stuff with Cameron was cute, but I would have loved to have learned more, like heard more about like the tours and I don't know all of the. I don't know. Yeah, that stuff is what I was hoping for. I don't think we would ever get anything about Stella, though. I don't think we'll ever hear of her again.
Stella was the manager for one of the most recent managers who managed her during the time of Mariah's World on E, just for people who are listening. And yeah, a lot of lambs, we don't really look fondly on the Stella.
No, we don't.
Was there anything else, aside from like sort of the recent stuff that you wish the book... that you thought the book maybe had missed or that you wish was included more? Or I was surprised at the Will Smith stuff. I don't know why I was like really interested in that. I like that they had a nice little friendship that seemed to have started when they were really young. And also it put them sort of both in perspective to me that they met when they were really young and had this work ethic and vision of their careers. And they both have realized it. I don't know, something about that touch me.
Yeah, I liked hearing. I love because there's that famous picture of them at that concert they met at, where she's like, "My pony," and stuff. And I love that. She didn't really indicate if they're still friends today. I'm sure they are, but like, she doesn't really go into like where those relationships stand today, which I would have loved to have heard more about. Like, I think stuff like that is really interesting. Hanging out with Lenny Kravitz on the Upper West Side. When he was Romeo Blue or whatever he was going by then. Like, that's awesome to me. I would love to have heard more about her years in the city before she was signed. I know that she gave us some like details about it, but I would have loved to have heard more about like the players, like the people that were in, like she was kind of moving, the circle she was moving in and stuff like that.
I wonder how tough it was. Michaela Angela Davis was the co-author. And I'm sure it was challenging trying to figure out the angle of this because her career is so vast. And they did a great job. But of course, because her career is so expansive, there's just a lot that, of course, they weren't able to include that, you know, I hope one day we'll get, you know, I also love a sit down with Mariah where it's an extended interview because some of the shorter ones, you don't really get the details you want. Like I love Watch What Happens Live, of course, but it's like something like that. You have to do games and you have 20 minutes and it's just so fast. And I hope going forward, now that Mariah has sort of released a lot of this information into the wild, that maybe she'll do more sit downs. Like the Oprah one was really great to me because it was a long period of time. There was no commercials too, which was great.
Yeah, the Oprah one is great. And so is the one she did with Genius when Caution came out. She did like a sit down interview with them and she talked all about like her songwriting process and like some of the songs that she even doesn't really go into in the memoir, like, and how like her process, like how she wrote them and like the people she's collaborated with. It's a great interview. It's like an hour long. Like, find it if you haven't listened to it. But I did want to say that like we're talking about all these like salacious bits of information that we wanted to know, obviously, but I think a lot of that took a back seat to her focusing on like her experience as a biracial person growing up and really not feeling like she had a place to fit in on either side of like in from the white side of her family or the black side of her family. So I noticed that that was the common theme running through a lot of the book, is her, how her experience as a child, as a mixed race child, like followed her throughout the early parts of her career, obviously with Tommy, like trying to whitewash her and then her embracing it as she was emancipated. Like I loved that. That was the common, the through line through the whole book.
So compelling too. I mean, all of that stuff, it was heavy, but it was written in a very wonderful way. I thought it was all really great. There was so much. I mean, I know we're missing some things. I'm looking at my notes. Like, what did we miss? Of course, there was just so much. And the colorism she experienced was happening at such a young age. And I think it really touched me because I was thinking of what it must be like to try to interpret all those things happening to you. And there was a story about kids at the school kind of bullying her. And I was just thinking how difficult it must have been for her at that age to process all of it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine like not having, and she never told her father or her mother what she went through. So she didn't feel like she could, which was the most heartbreaking part of her story to me, is that she really for a long time only had herself to rely on. But the moment that I would most love to see on screen one day is her pulling up to that house in Southampton after she made it and getting out of that car and having this stupid bitch who was mean to her and locked her in that closet. Like, I'm so happy for you. Like, fuck yourself. Like, I loved that part. And I want to see it recreated on the screen.
Ah, yes. That part. Do you think there's anyone that could play Mariah? Like,
not yet. I think we won't have that. I think we don't even know who she is yet. She's somewhere, but she's too young at the moment. It'll be like a Zendaya, like, in 10 years.
I mentioned some of the songs she wrote later about the Tommy era. And there was that one. She wrote about that dinner with Tommy and Puff in Shake It Off, which was interesting to me, like the connection between those and all of the song connections, how we can trace like something that happened even very early on in her life to a song in her catalog. I think for Lambs, it was so exciting to be able to kind of do that math. Like at certain times while I was reading the book, I felt like Russell Crowe in A Beautiful Mind, like just tracing everything. I'm like, oh, that's why she wrote that. Or
right,
that's where that lyric came from.
Like when she said she wanted to cook breakfast for Derek and like found his sister, and she goes, it was an eighth grade moment, and like she has a song called Eighth Grade on Caution. Like,
oh my god, I didn't even think that. I didn't even see exactly. Mm-hmm. Okay, so with the release of this book, she also released this album called The Rarities. It's got a lot of great tracks. We talked about Lover Boy. I am personally really obsessed with Cool on You right now.
Cool on You is great. Cool on You is great. Mesmerized. Another one that I'm very, very, very into. I want to like be on a yacht going like this to it. And I'm, for those listening, I'm just pumping my shoulders slightly.
Did you ever see that
signature dance move?
Did you ever see that Mad TV sketch where they're parroting the MTV Icon Award for Whitney Houston, and they have Pink, someone as Pink, doing a Whitney Houston song, and she's dancing. Like, but she's doing like the worst dance moves. I have to send it to you. It's so funny. It's very dated, but it's hysterical. That's the dance move you were just doing. It was like,
that's my signature dance move. So I'm glad to know that.
That is a Mad TV actor as Pink doing a Whitney Houston song.
Got it.
Any rarities that you are missing? Like I couldn't really think of many that I would still like to hear, obviously, other than the Rock album. And Where Are You Christmas? But
the Rock album, There's a song she did with Timbaland a few years ago called Skydiving. There's like, it's on
YouTube.
Didn't
she tweet about that? Didn't she just tweet like, Timbaland, we need that or something?
Yeah, that was a while ago, like before this whole book was even coming out. I think she tweeted about it. There's like versions of it on YouTube you can listen to. The other one was a song called Panic the City or something like that, that she tweeted about a while back, or Busta Rhymes tweeted about it, and they were playing it in a nightclub somewhere, and like you could hear it in the background. Would have loved to have heard that one too.
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll hear it again. We'll hear it at some point.
Those vaults, I'm so interested. And all the artists, I'm always endlessly fascinated. Like, what's in the vault? And like, what great music is in the vault that like you just can't release because there's like legal business issues? Like, I need the mechanics of all of it with all of our
artists. I want to know. Yeah. I know. I want to hear everything in there.
Because I feel like with anyone, like you could think of Britney Spears or something, and it's like, I want to know. By the way, she had a respectful moment with Britney Spears where Andy on Watch What Happens Live was like asking her about Britney, and she just said she doesn't know the situation, but there's always been a nice little relationship between her and Britney. We've seen like photos of them out to dinner, and I would love to hear a conversation between the two of them.
I can't even begin to compute what would take place during that conversation, but I would love to be a fly on the wall.
Greggy, that's all I have. Is there anything else you want to talk about that we maybe missed? I know people are going to be writing me. You've mentioned this on Everything Iconic before, but people are going to say, why didn't you ask Greggy what his favorite Mariah song is? So tell people.
Oh, I Breakdown is my favorite Mariah song. I just love everything about it. Can listen to it a million times in a row and never get tired of it. That and Outside is my other favorite, but. She sang it on the audiobook, which is crazy. I can't believe she's never sung it live before.
Like, I did the reading of the book, and then I did the audio, and it was a special experience. I truly almost never like the audio. I know some people always say you have to listen to the audio for celebrity memoirs, and I truly don't normally like it, but this one was good. I liked when she would do the little ad-libs and randomly break into song. It was like, it made it really special for the audiobook.
I know, it was the best part. I hated that she chose to sing some of the lyrics, but then would read other ones because I really wanted her. Like, I wanted to hear her sing like
a whole fucking
some
of the concert. Stuff she,
right, basically, yes. Just please sing a cappella for me at all times.
It's interesting what people are doing. I mentioned Jessica Simpson, and when she did her audiobook, she released songs with the audiobook. And I think there's an interesting way to incorporate new art into the audiobooks, if that makes any sense. And I'm fascinated by that. And I hope artists continue doing, really putting effort into the audiobook instead of just straight reading, because I think it makes a difference. And I'm willing to buy both if it's good, if it's for a reason.
Agree. It's changed the game once again.
Greggy, I want to let you go. Before I do, I want to say, if anyone's watching, I'm wearing a Queen Icon Legend t-shirt in honor of Mariah, and you could buy these at everythingiconic.store. Gotta promote the merch.
Yeah, sell that merch, girl.
You can find me on social media at Danny Pellegrino on Twitter and Instagram. Again, you can watch this and some of the interviews on YouTube, youtube.com/Danny Pellegrino and the number one. Greggy, where can people find you? And do you have any other thoughts and anything else?
I have so many thoughts. I often share them on my Instagram stories or my Twitter feed, and they're both at Greggy Bennett. That's the only place you can find me, and that's the place you'll always be able to find me. So follow me and give me your unsolicited opinions back.
Well, Greggy, thank you so much. I love you, and I'm so happy. Everyone always wants you to come on. You have to come back for like a Housewives thing, because I know everyone loves to hear you talk about that.
Anytime, so. Danny.
Are you watching all the Housewives right now, or are you giving up on?
Potomac, I'm all in on. OC starts tonight. I don't know. I guess. Just Kelly Dodd is so gross. It's all, I don't know. We'll see. I'm excited for Salt Lake City.
Me too.
Can't wait.
Okay, Greggy, I love you. Stay safe and good luck. I know you just moved, so I was going to say good luck.
I gotta go put my bed together right after we get home.
Thank you, Greggy.
Thanks, Bye. Danny.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.